The weight of his leaving settled on them.
Who will fix things while you are gone? She asked.
You will have to be the one to fix things now. Ivy, when I'm gone, you need to be a good little soldier for Mama and Papa.
But I don't know how to fix things. I don't have tools.
There are other ways to fix things. When I'm away, our family is going to be a little bit broken. I'm counting on you to hold it together. You're smart. Keep doing well in school. It will be one less thing Mama and Papa have to worry about with me away at war.
You're talented. You do have a gift.
You saw how your harmonica playing brought joy to us these past few weeks.
Keep playing. More than ever, Mama and Papa are going to need a little joy in their lives. You're caring. And Mama and Papa are going to need that kind of support, too. Especially if my letters are slow to arrive. Or if something happens to me. So you see, you do have the tools.
You'll do that for me, yes?
Fix things while I'm gone and hold our family together?
He held out his little finger for her to seal the promise. She locked her little finger with his.
But nothing is going to happen to you, right?
Not if I can help it.
Fernando opened his other hand and offered her a penny.
One more song before I leave?
She took the penny, put it in the zippered pocket of the jacket, and began the tune to the lyrics.
Over hill, over dale, as we hit the dusty trail, and those caissons go rolling along.
In her mind, she saw a dark forest where Fernando ran through briars and brambles, lonely and afraid, struggling to find a way out. A menacing shadow crept after him. Fear made her breath quicken. She dropped the harmonica, and it clattered to the step.
"Be careful, Nando," she said,
burying her head in his arms. After basic training, Fernando's friends came home for leave, their heads shaved, arms muscled, and faces weathered. Their families besieged them with home cooking and affection. But Fernando never came home. Instead, he went straight to advanced training. The army thought him perfectly suited for war after all. Ivy and her family learned to live like so many others, letter to letter. Her class had filled the stamp book and was invited to perform on the Colgate Family Hour. Together, they would play Auld Lang Syne. After, there would be a solo of America the Beautiful. When Miss Delgado chose Ivy for the solo, she had cried from the excitement of it all and immediately wrote to Fernando to tell him. For over 3 hours, the truck crawled on Highway 99 behind the hazy red taillights of the cars in front of them, the fog still a thick soup. Papa downshifted the gears, and the motor groaned as the truck began the slow grade up the mountain.
How much longer? Asked Ivy.
Another few hours. First, we must get over the ridge and through Los Angeles. We'll stop soon to stretch.
The truck climbed. The fog thinned and the world brightened. In one magical instant, as if someone had snatched a gray veil from their heads. A blue sky startled them, and the noses of mountains jutted forward, radiant and dewy in the glare of the sun.
Papa was right about one thing.
The weather was better. Chapter 4
Look, Ivy, that must be your new school, said Mama.
It was late afternoon, and Papa had finally turned off the highway and down a long road that stretched toward the horizon, orange trees on one side, lemon on the other. Papa slowed the truck through the small town and idled in front of a one-story white stucco building with a sign that read, Lincoln School. A cluster of palm trees anchored the front corners of the property. Manicured lawns surrounded the building. Geraniums filled the flower beds beneath the windows, and rose bushes, some of them blooming, lined the walkway to the front steps.
It is more green and pretty here, yes?
Said Papa, rolling down his window and leaning his elbow out. A citrusy smell perfumed the cab.
Not so brown and gray like the valley in winter. A land of sunshine and flowers, even in December.
Ivy couldn't argue about that. She read the sign taped across two classroom windows.
5th and 6th grades join the Lincoln Orchestra. Starts in January.
Orchestra? Said Ivy. None of her other schools had one. Even the word, like the school, felt beautiful and well-kept. She imagined that most of the students who joined had already been taking music lessons and owned an instrument. Still, an orchestra. As Papa drove on, Ivy craned her head to look back at the playground, a blacktop area painted with 4 square grids, hopscotches, and a basketball hoop. Beyond was a grassy field with backstops for baseball and kickball.
Are you sure this is my school?
Papa reached forward and patted the large envelope on the dashboard.
Guillermo and Bertina sent the papers for Lincoln School, and that is what the sign says.
He nudged her, grinning. Ivy could not help but smile, too. Papa drove a few more miles and turned down a long dirt drive through the middle of an orange grove.
There!
He pointed ahead to an area cleared of trees where a wood plank house sat in the center. It had a front porch just wide enough for the 2 old rocking chairs waiting to be occupied. The barn doors on the garage did not quite meet in the middle, and the house and garage both needed a new coat of paint. But they were bigger and more welcoming than their bungalow in Fresno. They climbed from the truck, stretched, and walked around the property. The backyard was fenced with old pickets that could not make up their minds about which way to lean. In a swath of sun on the side of the house, 2 large T-shaped poles faced each other, with clotheslines strung between them. Iris plants, the leaves yellowed and brown, choked the flower beds. Papa took a handmade map from the envelope and studied it. Looking up, he pointed through the rows of orange trees on the same side of the road.
Through the grove, you can just see the owner's house in the distance.
Does he have children? Asked Ivy.
A boy, a little older than Fernando, who is in the Marines, and 2 girls close to your age, but they are not here right now.
Ivy felt her heart leap. At least there were girls her age. She hoped they could be friends. She knew she'd never be friends with anyone like she was with Araceli, but at least she'd have someone.
Will they be back soon, Papa? Are they on vacation? Will we go to school together?
Papa glanced at Mama, but didn't answer. He busied himself untying Ivy's suitcase. As he handed it to her, she could sense there was something he wasn't telling her. But what? Before she could ask another question, Mama took her hand and led her to the house. They stepped inside a screened-in back porch. A washer with a round tub sat in a corner. An electrical cord dangled from its side, and attached above it, the wringer, like 2 giant rolling pins, one on top of the other, waited to be fed wet laundry. Mama smiled.
We will not have to scrub the clothes in a metal tub. What a luxury!
They walked into the house, from room to room.
It has what we need. Table and chairs, beds, a sofa in the living room, said Mama. And we have the rest in the truck.
It is simple but clean.
It feels like a home.
It was true. And Ivy couldn't help but notice the lilt in Mama's voice. Maybe coming here would make Mama happy, and she wouldn't worry so much about Fernando. As they continued to walk through the house, peeking into every room, Ivy felt her own spirits lift. They reached the smallest of the 3 bedrooms, which held a metal twin bed frame and mattress. The walls were covered with faded wallpaper of trailing green vines and tiny rose-colored buds. Mama said,
"And this is your bedroom."
Ivy looked at Mama.
My own?
She had always had to share with Fernando.
She tried to imagine a room all to herself, without two twin beds crammed side by side, or a dresser crowded with Fernando's basketball trophies, or having to share the drawers and the closet.
But, Mama, don't you need a room for your sewing?
Mama smiled. I will set up my machine in Fernando's bedroom until he comes home from the war. I think I will enjoy sewing next to all of his things.
Papa appeared, carrying the small three-drawer dresser. He positioned it against a wall and patted her on the shoulder. Before he left to unload, he grinned and said,
Didn't I tell you everything would be better?
Ivy walked around the room. She bounced on the mattress, checked inside the closet, and gazed out the bedroom window at the rows upon rows of orange trees that surrounded the house. She thought about her new school. She was tempted to believe Papa, especially with Mama humming in the kitchen and Papa whistling as he carried in boxes, sounding happier than they had in months. Ivy let a tiny bit of happiness creep into her heart, too. She'd never once, in all the places they'd lived, had a room of her own. She pulled the harmonica from her pocket and played the tune to the lyrics.
Sailing, sailing over the bounding main.
And in her mind, she traveled to her own little island, surrounded by a green, waxy-leafed ocean, with golden, round-bellied fish bobbing in the waves. Chapter 5. Ivy had already unpacked her clothes, hung Fernando's jacket in the closet, and placed the harmonica on the dresser alongside the instruction booklet when there was a knock on the front door. Had the owner's daughters returned home? Ivy ran to the door and opened it as Mama appeared behind her. A woman and a girl stood on the steps. The woman wore a Sunday dress, even though it was Thursday, a hat that looked like an upside-down rowboat, and a tweed coat. She held a stack of black fabric in her arms. The girl looked to be Ivy's age. She wore a matching blue coat and dress, and her hair was swept to the side and caught up in a blue bow. With her black hair, pale skin, and eyes the color of dark green leaves, she looked like a porcelain doll from a toy shop window. Behind them, a large Buick was parked in the drive. A burly man with short, sandy hair stood next to the driver's door. His hands were behind his back, elbows out, and his feet planted apart, like a soldier might stand.
"Hello," said Mama.
"Good afternoon. I'm Joyce Ward," said the woman. "And this is my daughter Susan. Are you..."
She looked at a piece of paper in her hand.
"Mrs. Lopez?"
"Yes, I am Luz Lopez," said Mama.
"Bertina said you'd be arriving soon. We were just driving by on our way home from town and saw your truck, so we stopped. Did she write to you about the laundry and ironing?"
"Oh, yes," said Mama. "Wednesdays I pick up the clothes and bring them back here. Fridays I bring them to your house and finish with the ironing."
"That's right. And you are willing?" said Mrs. Ward.
Mama nodded.
"Of course. The address?"
"We're just down the road and around the corner on Blanchard Lane. It's the tall white house with the green roof. Our back fields connect, but it will be easier for you to drive around." "Oh, I'm so relieved. I've been lost without Bertina. You see, I have arthritis and it's hard for me to lift an iron. And the clothes are piling up. I can stop by and pick up a few things before Wednesday if you like."
"Could you?" said Mrs. Ward. "That would be a help."
Mama smiled.
"Yes, of course. Tomorrow afternoon..."
Ivy cleared her throat. Mama put a hand on Ivy's shoulder.
"This is my daughter, Ivy. Our son Fernando is in the army."
Ivy noticed Mrs. Ward's face grow tight.
"We will pray for his safety."
"Thank you," said Mama. "I have a question. Ivy will go to the Lincoln School, 5th grade. I need to turn in her papers tomorrow before she can start. Do you know where she will meet the bus?"
At the end of your drive, said Mrs. Ward. Susan gets picked up at 8 o'clock, and you would be the next stop. If you turn in her papers at the main office tomorrow, I imagine she can start on Monday. There's only one more week of school before Christmas vacation, but at least she can settle in. You probably saw the school on your way here? Susan took a step closer to Ivy and smiled. I'm in the fifth grade, too. We'll see each other every day. Ivy smiled in return and nodded, relieved to have a familiar face on her first day. She'd never started a new school without Fernando by her side. I'll save you a seat on the bus, said Susan. Mrs. Ward passed the stack of black fabric to Mama. These are for you. My husband is retired military and is the chairman of the county CSO, the Civilian Safety Organization. They're blackout curtains for your windows. Everyone must use them after dark. So the Japanese can't see the west coast of America to bomb us, said Susan. One speck of light and their planes can see California. Ivy reached for Mama's hand and squeezed it. Were they in danger? Susan must have sensed her nervousness. Oh, don't worry, she said. My dad says we're perfectly safe as long as everyone uses the curtains. If you are interested, said Mrs. Ward, I volunteer for the Red Cross on Sunday afternoons, making bandages and wound dressings for the troops. We are always looking for volunteers. Mama nodded. I think that is something I would like very much. Mrs. Ward glanced back at the car and lowered her voice. And you are welcome to bring Ivy with you whenever you come to the house. It would be company for Susan. Susan's eyes grew larger. Promise to come tomorrow with your mom? Ivy nodded. Okay. Mrs. Ward glanced back again. Mr. Ward had begun to pace near the car. Why hadn't he come to the door to introduce himself? Mrs. Ward took Susan's hand. We better go. Ivy watched them walk down the drive. Mr. Ward walked around the front of the car to open the passenger door for his wife, then the back door for Susan. After they were inside, he shut the doors, put his hands on his hips, and gave one curt nod toward Mama and Ivy, frowning. As the car pulled away, Ivy said, Mama, Mr. Ward does not look very friendly.
No, Mama agreed. He looks the opposite. But you cannot trust appearances. When someone wears a face like that, it is often hiding a reason we cannot see.
Ivy watched the car disappear. What could Mr. Ward be hiding? Chapter 6.
Why couldn't I go with Mama to the school?
Ivy asked Papa the next morning as they walked through the orange grove.
Ivy, Maria, we have been over this, said Papa.
But why must I go with you to the owner's house? You said the daughters are not even there for me to meet. Isn't it more important I meet my new teacher?
Mama is only leaving your papers at the office and confirming you may start on Monday. The students and teachers are in class. And after, Mama has errands and we don't know how long that will take. I wanted you with me so I could explain some things.
Ivy took the harmonica from Fernando's jacket and began to play My Country Tis of Thee. Before she finished, she lowered it and said,
Papa, do you think my new teacher will be as lovely as Miss Delgado? Miss Delgado was like a queen who lived in a castle. We were her subjects, and every day she opened a treasure box and gave us jewels.
Papa frowned at her.
Ivy, enough with your pretending. You are getting too old for it. And you interrupted me. Did you not hear me say I needed to explain some things to you? Now put away your toy.
Ivy felt the sting of his words as she slipped the harmonica back into a pocket.
Sorry, Papa. What did you want to explain?
Papa kept walking until they emerged from the trees, and then he swept his arm toward a dilapidated house. The lawn had turned brown from lack of water. The plants in the flower beds had shriveled, and the ground was thick with weeds. Lumber had been nailed across the front door and all the windows. The wood porch and railing that wrapped around the front and one side of the house were caked with dust and dirt.
Papa, what happened?
Do you remember last spring when all of the Japanese children left your school in Fresno?
Ivy nodded. Miss Delgado said they had to live in a special camp because we are at war with Japan.
One day her classroom was full and every desk taken. The next, the class was half its size.
That is what happened to the owner and his family, said Papa. The Yamamotos are Japanese. The government calls them enemies of the United States. There are hundreds of farms such as this in California where the owners have been confined in a camp. If the bills are not paid each month, the owners will lose everything. That is why I am here.
You are here to save their farm? Asked Ivy.
Papa nodded.
I will run it for Mr. Yamamoto while he is away. I will take care of the bills, pay myself a salary, and save the profits for him. In return, when the war is over, he will keep me on as supervisor and deed me the house and the small piece of land it sits on.
To own, Papa said the words, as if he were praying.
Own? That meant staying and not leaving, even after a year. And there were things to stay for. A school with an orchestra, her own room, Fernando coming home to a house, maybe even friends.
In a few weeks, Mr. Yamamoto's son, Kenneth, will be allowed to bring me the legal papers, said Papa. If he likes me and how I am caring for the property, we will sign an agreement that guarantees hope for both of our families. So you see, our future is tied to their future.
If the son can come here from the Japanese camp, why can't they all come?
Papa shook his head.
Kenneth is not in the camp. He is an officer in the United States Marines, a translator. He will have only a short leave to take care of his father's business.
His parents and sisters are enemies, but he is not?
Papa shook his head.
I do not see how any of them could be enemies.
The farm has been in the family for 40 years. Mr. Yamamoto fought for the United States in World War I.
Then why were they sent away?
Those are good questions, Ivy. But for some questions, there are no good answers.
He walked toward the backyard. Ivy followed, her mind filling with more questions. What if the other Japanese farmers can't find someone like you to run their farms?
The bank will sell them for much less than they are worth. And there are many people who want to buy up the land. Mr. Ward, the neighbor, is one of the eager ones. He has bought 3 farms in the area already. He made an offer to Mr. Yamamoto, but was refused.
Was that what Mr. Ward was hiding? That he wanted the Yamamoto farm but couldn't have it? Was he angry at Papa for coming to save it? They wandered to the side of the house where there had once been a large vegetable garden. Wire trellises held up withered tomato vines with rotted fruit. Behind the garden sat a wooden shed with a window. From his inside jacket pocket, Papa pulled the envelope Guillermo had sent, tilting it so a large ring with a dozen keys slid into his hand, along with 2 smaller rings, each with a single key.
Duplicates for the shed and house.
He tried different keys in the padlock on the shed until the right one unlocked it. When he pulled it open, one of the hinges fell off.
I'll fix it tomorrow, said Papa.
Ivy looked inside as Papa took inventory of the shovels, rakes, and hoes. Large, wide-brimmed straw hats hung from nails. A wood box held packets of seeds. But it was the child-sized wheelbarrow that tugged at Ivy's heart. It was filled with little trowels and sun hats and tiny clay pots, each one nesting inside another. She imagined the 2 girls following their father, planting seedlings in the garden, plants they might never see grow. When Papa finished surveying the tools,
He shut the shed as best he could, and they headed toward the house. Ivy gasped when they reached the back door. Someone had painted the words, "Japs, yellow enemies."
"Papa, that's awful."
Papa sucked air through gritted teeth.
"I do not like these words."
"Papa, the son's feelings will be hurt if he sees this. He wouldn't be pleased. We should paint over it."
"I'm glad you feel that way. That's exactly what we should do. We need to look inside the house too, but it will take some time to go through their things. Maybe Mama can do it next week."
"Look for what?"
"When a house is closed for a long time, it's always a good idea to check for water leaks or rodent nests, and to make sure all the windows are shut tight so squirrels or birds can't get in."
Papa shook his head at what had been done to the door. Ivy reached up and touched the angry words.
"Papa, who would do such a thing?"
"I think there are many. I read in the newspaper that someone set fire to the building that was the Japanese church. And someone broke all the windows of the Japanese laundry. It is a matter of record that those buildings are still owned by Japanese. The same as this farm. People know Mr. Yamamoto did not sell."
Ivy worried.
"Is it safe for you, Papa? Will people be upset with you for working here?"
"I don't think so. Farmers are in short supply. Do you know what the government calls us now?"
Papa stood a little taller.
"Food soldiers. Not only must we grow food for the country, but for the soldiers too. That is why the government wants families to plant war gardens, to lessen the burden on the farmers. During the war, every American is a soldier of one kind or another. The government even has the Japanese Americans in the camps farming the surrounding fields."
"But, Papa, couldn't the Yamamotos have been food soldiers in their own fields?"
He sighed but didn't answer. Instead, he pulled a photograph from the envelope and studied it. Ivy leaned closer to get a better look. It was a picture of Mr. and Mrs. Yamamoto and their family. They were standing in front of a church. He wore dark-rimmed glasses. She wore a dress with a white lace collar. Kenneth already stood a little taller than his father. The two girls, their hair in short page boy cuts with straight bangs, wore Sunday dresses and Mary Jane shoes. The younger one tilted her head toward her sister, smiling and holding a well-loved doll. Ivy was not sure what enemies looked like, but she could not imagine that they looked like this family. She pointed to the doll.
"Do you think they let her take it with her?"
Papa nodded. "Probably. They could take what they could hold in their arms, but nothing more. Now, it is our job to protect what they left behind, until they return."
Suddenly, Ivy felt guilty for complaining about packing up to leave Fresno so suddenly. At least she got to come here, to a house they might one day own, when the Yamamoto girls were in a camp with only what they could carry. Ivy followed Papa back the way they had come and stopped in front of one section of the house that was covered, ground to eaves, with a wooden lattice that had been nailed over sheets of wood. Green vines climbed upward in overgrown confusion, runners dangling from the sides. Ivy frowned.
"It needs pruning, Papa."
He studied the latticework.
"I agree, but Mr. Yamamoto asked in his letter that I let it grow and fill in. He is particular, to be sure, but I can tell that he loves his farm. I will do as he asks."
"With the windows all boarded, the house looks embarrassed and sad, Papa, like a dog when it has been shamed."
"Yes," said Papa. "The house is very sad."
They walked down the drive toward a three-sided wood structure near the road. A rickety bench leaned against the back wall, and a warped table sat in front.
"Is this a bus stop?" asked Ivy.
Papa shook his head.
"It is Mrs. Yamamoto's stand. She sold oranges in the spring and vegetables in the summer."
While Papa inspected it, Ivy took the harmonica from her pocket and played Skip to My Lou.
She looked back at the house and, in her mind, saw a different place in a different time. A freshly painted home with lace curtains in the windows, a tidy green lawn where a picnic was laid out on an old quilt, and the Yamamoto girls holding hands and dancing in a circle with the doll.
Skip, skip, skip to my loo, my darling.
They danced until they grew dizzy and collapsed on the grass, giddy and giggling. Ivy lowered the harmonica, knowing the Yamamoto girls would have been her friends, if they hadn't been sent away. Chapter 7. The ward house looked as if it belonged in a storybook instead of an orange grove. It was large and white, with a steep-pitched roof, and it stretched 2 stories high. Green latticework wrapped the porch, and gingerbread trim hung from the eaves and windows. Prim and clean, the home sat in a grassy yard where the flower beds had been raked and planted with geraniums. Unlike the Yamamotos, there wasn't a dead leaf, weed, or withered blossom sullying the yard. 2 small flags hung side by side in the front window. Both had a white field, red border, and a star in the center. One with a blue star, the other gold.
Mama, the house! It's beautiful, said Ivy as they climbed from the truck that afternoon to pick up the ironing.
It is lovely, isn't it? Said Mama.
They walked up the front path to the door. Ivy whispered,
What if Mr. Ward is here?
Just be polite and remember, not everything is as it seems. I'm sure he's not as unfriendly on the inside as he appears on the outside.
Ivy rang the bell. They heard chimes and then pounding footsteps. The door flung open, and Susan stood before them, grinning. Her hair was braided, and she wore a green sweater over a white blouse with a lace-trimmed collar. Ivy ran her hands over Fernando's jacket and her dungarees, and felt as if she should have worn something nicer.
Come in, said Susan. My mother said to tell you she will be right back. She's in the garage. Ivy, look at my hair. I did it just like yours.
Ivy tried not to gawk at the splendor as she followed Mama inside the front hall. An oak staircase led to the 2nd story. To the left was a parlor with burgundy, claw-footed couches. A Christmas tree touched the ceiling and was decorated with glass ornaments and topped with a golden-haired angel. Ivy had never seen such luxury. Susan had everything. A fancy house, beautiful clothes, and a pretty face.
Want to see my room? She asked Ivy.
Ivy looked up at Mama and nodded.
Maybe it is better if you stay with me, said Mama.
It's okay, Mrs. Lopez, said Susan. Bertina's daughter always came to my room, and she was only 5 years old.
Mama relented.
For just a few minutes.
Ivy followed Susan up the stairs into a bedroom 3 times the size of hers. There was a white dresser and vanity, matching nightstand, and a canopied bed with a white chenille spread. One of the double closet doors was open, revealing a row of dresses. The room looked like a picture from the Sears catalog, the one Ivy and Fernando used to huddle over, dreaming of what they would purchase if they had the money. Suddenly, Ivy's excitement about her own new bedroom began to wither. Did Susan know how lucky she was? It didn't seem fair, somehow, after seeing the Yamamoto's house that morning, and thinking of her own small room with the faded wallpaper, that Susan had so much. Susan pointed to the harmonica poking from Ivy's jacket pocket.
Can you play something?
Swallowing her jealousy, Ivy said,
Sure.
She pulled it out and played Jingle Bells. Susan clapped when she finished.
That was great! Thanks.
I was going to be on the radio and perform a solo before we had to come here.
Ivy felt a stab of regret.
The radio? Wow! You should join the orchestra, said Susan. Anybody in fifth or sixth who wants to can. There's an orientation meeting next Thursday after school, and then lessons start in January after vacation. I bet you'd be good at flute. That's what I'm going to play.
I wish I could. I don't have a flute, and I've never had any lessons.
You don't need a flute, said Susan. Mr. Daniels, the orchestra director, loans you one and teaches you how to play. We take lessons for 3 months and then practice all together as an orchestra after that. There's a recital in June and everything. I know because my brothers played clarinet.
Susan grinned.
If you join, we could be together every Thursday after school.
Miss Delgado had said she could learn almost any instrument if she tried,
and Ivy wanted to try.
I'll ask my parents.
If they say yes, my mom can give you a ride home on Thursday after the meeting, since we have to stay later than the bus.
Susan nodded toward Ivy's harmonica.
I never played one before. Is it hard?
If you have one, I can teach you.
In my brother's room. Come on.
She motioned for Ivy to follow. Down the hall, they entered an even larger bedroom. All the furniture, the twin beds, dressers, and desks were made of knotty pine. A large framed photograph of a uniformed soldier sat on each dresser, one of them draped with medals. Susan rummaged through the top drawer of one of the desks. She nodded to the photos.
Those are my brothers, Donald and Tom. Tom is in the army and drives a tank, and Donald...
Frowning, she closed the drawer and opened the next one down. She held up a harmonica.
I knew there was one in here somewhere.
Ivy smiled.
I have a booklet at home that tells you how to play, step by step. I can bring it to you.
Mama's and Mrs. Ward's voices floated up from downstairs.
I better go, said Ivy.
Want to meet tomorrow between the groves? You just walk all the way through the one behind your house to the division road. There's an old wagon there.
She held up her harmonica.
You can give me my first lesson. 2 o'clock?
Ivy nodded.
Okay.
Promise?
Said Susan, sounding as if she didn't believe Ivy.
Promise.
Ivy hurried downstairs. Susan followed and never stopped waving from the porch as Ivy and Mama climbed into the truck and backed slowly down the long drive.
Susan seems nice, said Mama.
Mama, you should see her room. It looks like a princess sleeps there. Her closet is filled with dresses.
I wish I had just half of her dresses. She has everything.
Ivy, I don't like to hear you sounding so envious. Yes, she has things, but they are just that, things. She is a girl like you, and it is nice for you to know someone your age who lives nearby.
I don't know why she wants to be my friend. She must have dozens. Of course, she couldn't ever be my best friend because of Araceli.
Maybe she wants to be your friend because she needs one, said Mama.
And Ivy, you can have more than one best friend.
Oh, no, Mama. That is Araceli's place in my heart.
Mama smiled.
Your heart is bigger than you think.
Ivy watched Susan and the house with the flags in the front window grow smaller.
Mama, what are those flags for?
Each star is for a soldier, for one of their sons in the war.
We should have one for our house, said Ivy. For Fernando.
But maybe a gold one. They're prettier. Ivy Maria, do not ever say such a thing.
Mama kept one hand on the steering wheel, and with the other made the sign of the cross.
Why not?
Asked Ivy. The gold star is for a soldier who has died.
Chapter 8. Even though the sun bloomed warm and bright on Saturday afternoon, Ivy still wore Fernando's jacket and the purple hat from Araceli. She had written to both of them last night, telling all about the house and her own room, the Yamamotos and the Wards. When she reached the dirt road that divided the two properties, Ivy saw Susan waving from the long wooden wagon nestled between two rows of trees across the way. She raced over.
Hi, she said, climbing up and sitting on the bench across from Susan. What's this wagon for? A long time ago, my grandpa used to hitch horses to it and haul stuff around the farm. But now it's just for playing. My dad built the benches. Ivy pointed to three names carved into the inside planks of the wagon. Donald, Tom, Kenny. Did your brothers carve those? Susan nodded. They used to carry orange crates up here and build forts. And when they played hide-and-seek in the grove, the wagon was home base. Who's Kenny? Kenneth Yamamoto, said Susan. We always called him Kenny.
She stood and pointed across the fields to the yellow house in the distance.
From here, you can see the roofs of all three houses, yours, mine, and the Yamamoto's. It's a triangle. Kenny was Donald's best friend his whole entire life. He's the one who talked Donald into joining the Marines.
My dad didn't like that one bit, because he is U.S. Army through and through, and he wanted his sons to choose Army.
Then Donald...
He died in the bombs at Pearl Harbor. Ivy felt her stomach sink. She ran her finger over his name in the wood.
That's why you have the flag with the gold star in your window?
Susan nodded.
My mom and some other ladies sew them on their sewing machines, for remembering. My mom is making one for your house for your brother. I hope he doesn't die.
Ivy shuddered. Even though it wasn't cold and she was wearing Fernando's jacket, she felt goosebumps on her arms. She knew when Fernando went to war that it was dangerous, but the danger seemed so far away.
I hope he doesn't die, too.
She took a deep breath.
Did Kenny Yamamoto get hurt in the bombs?
Susan leaned closer.
No, and my dad says it's no miracle he escaped, because he probably knew about the bombing in advance. He thinks Kenny should be locked up with the rest of the Japanese. He says if Donald hadn't listened to that Jap spy, he'd be alive today.
Ivy felt her body stiffen.
Spy?
Susan's eyes widened and she nodded.
My dad says that for all he knows, Kenny is just pretending to be a loyal American so he can get information and give it back to the Japanese. The whole family could be spies. He thinks the Yamamotos are hiding something. And if they are, and he can prove it, they'll be sent to prison and their farm will be taken by the bank and sold.
How would he prove it?
By inspecting their house inside and out.
Ivy's feelings tangled. She didn't even know the Yamamotos, but after being at their sad house and seeing their neglected yard and knowing where they were now, she felt protective of them. Besides, weren't they already in a kind of prison?
She sat up straighter. My dad wouldn't work for spies, so I'm sure they're not. And he doesn't like the word Jap. Someone wrote that on their house, but we're going to paint over it.
Susan went on.
My dad knows these things because he used to be in Army intelligence, and now he's in charge of the CSO. They're always having meetings. He says every American must keep an eye out for suspicious activity and report it to the police. Even children. It's our duty. Have you seen anything suspicious over there?
Suspicious like what?
I don't know, secret documents, anything that could help the Japs, I mean the Japanese, win the war.
Ivy shrugged. I haven't been in the house, only the shed, but it was just gardening things.
If you do go inside the house, be careful, because it might be booby-trapped or rigged with bombs to protect their spy stuff. There could even be secret passageways. My dad says their type is capable of anything.
Ivy shook her head and raised her eyebrows. Did Susan believe all the things she was saying?
Susan shrugged. It might be true.
Her shoulders dropped a little, and she chewed on her lip.
I used to play with Kenny's sisters, Karen and Annie, all the time.
She gazed in the direction of the Yamamoto house.
Their mom was my piano teacher.
But that all ended after Donald... Her eyes shifted to the harmonica in her hand.
Can you teach me?
Ivy was more than happy to leave the spy talk behind.
She didn't like worrying about what might become of the Yamamotos if they were sent to prison, or what would become of her family if the bank sold their farm. It was enough to worry about Fernando. She went through the first pages of Harmonica Playing Made Easy, just as Miss Delgado had done, explaining the tabs to Susan. It's simple. There are 10 holes on the harmonica. Starting with the lowest note, each hole matches a number between 1 and 10. You look at the words of the song and the numbers above them. A regular number means blow into the hole for that note. A minus sign in front of a number means draw your breath or inhale for that note. She taught Susan Twinkle Twinkle Little Star and listened to her play it all the way through on her own.
You catch on really fast. You're good at music.
Susan gave Ivy a weak smile.
At least I'm good at something.
She lay back on the bench and gazed up at the sky.
I know what you mean, said Ivy, doing the same. My brother, Fernando, is good at everything. He can take apart anything and put it back together again, even a sewing machine.
Now he's finishing his training and will be sent to the fighting. It's all Mama and Papa talk about.
It's all anyone talks about, said Susan. Hey, why do you wear that jacket and that hat all the time?
The jacket is Fernando's. He loaned it to me while he's in the war. He wants me to know that he's still looking out for me. You know, keeping me warm and safe, even from far away. The hat is from my best friend, Araceli. Her mother made us matching ones.
We look so much alike, people think...
thought we were sisters. Ivy's words just kept coming, and Susan seemed so eager to listen that Ivy found herself telling all about Miss Delgado and the radio show and how sad she'd been to leave Fresno and how far ahead she was in the reading and math books.
I used to be ahead in my class, too, said Susan, but I got behind. I don't know why. Before, my parents always helped me with my homework. Now, they're just too tired all the time. And sad.
Ivy tried to imagine her own family's life without Fernando and how it would take them apart. If the worst happened, she wasn't sure she'd be able to keep her promise to him and hold them together. Her heart felt heavy just imagining it.
I'll help you with your homework.
Susan sat up and looked at her with disbelief.
You will?
Sure, said Ivy. We'll be doing the same assignments, right? You don't even have to tell anyone. It can be our secret.
Susan's eyes welled up, and she swiped at them.
Thanks, Ivy. You know, I'm glad you moved here. I don't really have... friends.
Ivy rolled on her side, propping her head up with her hand. It was hard to believe that Susan, who had so much, didn't have friends.
Why?
I'm not allowed. I can't invite anyone over. And I can never, ever go to someone else's house unless my mom is with me. It's okay for you to come to my house because your mom works for us. If my dad asked what you were doing there, my mom would say Mrs. Lopez didn't have anyone to watch you while she worked.
My mom, she makes it so it's okay.
Ivy was puzzled.
But we're together right now. I'm still on our property at arm's length. I play here all the time by myself. See, my mom says my dad is worried sick about losing another child, especially with Tom fighting somewhere in Europe. I don't know what would happen to us if Tom didn't come home safely, especially after Donald. She whispered. Sometimes my dad still cries about Donald.
Ivy didn't know what to say.
It was all so sad. And yet, she couldn't imagine the stone-faced Mr. Ward crying.
Susan looked down at her harmonica and frowned.
It was a telegram, you know. That's how we found out about Donald.
Ivy sat up, reached over, and squeezed Susan's hand. They stayed that way for a few moments, lost in their own thoughts, the only sounds the birds chirping from nearby trees. In the distance, a clanging interrupted the quiet.
That's my mom, ringing the back porch bell. I have to get right home.
Susan climbed down from the wagon.
I'll see you on Monday morning. The bus picks me up first. Remember, I'll save you a seat if you want me to.
Ivy nodded.
Yes, please.
Susan kept talking as she inched backward toward the grove.
Want to start meeting here on Saturdays? I can't next Saturday because I'm going to my grandma's for Christmas, but I can after I get back. It could be our place now, instead of belonging to the boys.
Sure, said Ivy. Cross your heart?
Ivy smiled and wrinkled her forehead.
Why do you always make me promise?
Susan shrugged.
I guess because sometimes people say you'll see them again, and then you don't.
Ivy looked at the names carved in the wagon and understood. She made an X over her chest with her finger. Cross my heart.
Chapter 9. While Papa fixed the shed door on Sunday, Ivy painted over the words on the back door of the Yamamoto's house and tried not to think about spies. Papa had said the Yamamoto's future was tied to their family's future. So if someone proved the Yamamoto's were spies, Papa would be out of work and they would have to move again. Maybe to someplace not nearly as bright with possibilities like being in an orchestra or owning a house. Later, as she laid out her clothes for school, spies kept popping into her mind. What did spies wear? Black clothes? Or did they dress like regular people during the day and save their spy clothes for nighttime when they did their spy work? Would black clothes be evidence? Ivy slept fitfully and woke much too early on Monday morning. But she wasn't nearly as nervous as she was on other first days of school. At least she wouldn't have to worry about finding her way around or where to sit at lunch or who she might play with at recess. Susan would be there. Mama walked with Ivy to the end of the drive and waited until the school bus wheezed to a stop. Ivy kissed her goodbye and climbed up the steps. Susan stood, grinning, and waved her over to her seat. Ivy scooted down the aisle and slid in next to her.
Hi, said Susan, squeezing Ivy's hand. Are you nervous?
Excited, she said, and glad we're together.
As the bus rumbled down the back roads, picking up more students, Ivy and Susan talked about how they would turn the wagon into a clubhouse instead of a fort. Finally, the bus stopped in front of Lincoln Elementary. Some of the students stood to get off, but Ivy noticed that others stayed seated. She stood as Susan scooted past her down the aisle. Ivy followed. At the front of the bus, the driver allowed Susan to pass, then put his arm in front of Ivy.
Young lady, where are you going?
Susan spun around and looked at Ivy, her eyes big with surprise. And then a seed of understanding bloomed on her face. She turned to the bus driver.
Oh, she's just moving to the front of the bus, right, Ivy?
She tilted her head toward the front seat, indicating where Ivy should sit.
Save me a place on the way home, okay? The bus picks up at your school first, so you'll get on before me.
Susan hurried down the steps, waving and casting a worried glance back at Ivy.
Your school? What was Susan saying?
The bus driver shut the doors.
Wait!
Called Ivy, turning to him.
I'm in fifth grade at Lincoln.
The bus driver picked up a clipboard and studied it.
Ivy Lopez?
Yes.
This is Lincoln, Maine. You go to Lincoln Annex, the Americanization school. Next stop.
Americanization? What did that mean?
Ivy was already American.
The driver put the bus in gear, and it lurched forward. Ivy stumbled into the front seat. As the bus pulled away, a group of boys on the steps of Lincoln, Maine waved and sang.
Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O.
Ivy felt her chest grow tight. This had to be a mistake. She turned to look at the other leftover students. They didn't seem concerned one bit that the bus was leaving. They talked and laughed with one another as if nothing odd had happened. Several miles later, the driver stopped the bus and opened the doors. He called,
Lincoln Annex!
Out the window, Ivy saw a long, squat building with a tin corrugated roof in the middle of a dirt field. There were no flower beds, no geraniums or roses, no palm trees,
This was her school? It looked like a warehouse for farm equipment. That's when Ivy finally noticed that all the students on the bus and milling in front of the school looked the same. Brown-eyed, dark-haired, and olive-skinned, like her. A boy from the back of the bus stopped next to Ivy and motioned toward the door, smiling. Without a word, Ivy slid from her seat and climbed down. She stood on the walkway, staring at the school as students and parents flooded around her. The boy came up beside her.
I'm Ignacio. First day? From where?
Fresno, said Ivy, still confused.
So, you didn't know there were two schools?
She shook her head and looked down, feeling her face flush with embarrassment.
What grade are you in?
Fifth, said Ivy.
I'm in sixth. You like your teacher, Miss Carmelo. I was in her class last year. That is, you'll like her if you're a good student.
Ivy stood a little taller.
I had the best grades in my entire class at my other school.
Ignacio puffed his chest.
And I'm the fastest runner in three counties. I hold the school track record. I have medals and everything.
Ivy crossed her arms.
I was going to perform on the radio.
He laughed.
Come on, radio star. I'll show you your room. And in case you were wondering, yes, it's as bad as it looks. But we can go to Lincoln, Maine after school, if we're in sports or music.
She followed him inside.
But I'm already American, and I already speak English.
Me too.
But then, why are we here?
He shrugged and pointed to the end of the hall.
Room 16. See you around.
Ivy glanced into each classroom until she came to her own. Miss Carmelo, a wisp of a woman with a black bun on her head, greeted Ivy and found a desk for her next to the windows. Ignacio was right. She was nice. But she didn't let students work ahead. All morning, in every subject, Ivy finished before the others and sat with her hands folded on the desk, gazing out onto the empty field.
Why hadn't Susan told her about the two schools?
She'd acted as if they would be in the same class, hadn't she? She'd said they'd see each other every day. Had she meant only on the bus? At the outside lunch tables, Ivy sat by herself, looking onto what they called the playground, a weedy acre with a chain-link fence around it. There was no blacktop area painted with four square courts and hopscotches, no grass, no backstops for baseball and kickball. Beyond the playground was an egg farm. Chickens pecked and clucked beneath row upon row of elevated coops. Chicken feathers littered both properties. No wonder the boys at Lincoln, Maine sang Old MacDonald. Ivy pulled the harmonica from her pocket, hoping to play and remind herself she was someone. She blew a chord and felt a speck of determination, a tiny spark of courage, until the wind shifted. The smell from the egg farm made her stomach turn, and she thought she might gag. She put away the harmonica. All afternoon, Miss Carmelo reviewed English for those who didn't speak it well. Ivy thought she might fall asleep from boredom. But she answered every question correctly when she was called upon, and finished the worksheets within minutes. At the end of the day, Miss Carmelo called Ivy to her desk.
Dear, you speak English very well. I don't think you need this review every afternoon.
No, Miss Carmelo, I was born in the United States. I speak English perfectly.
Yes, I see that. I think you would be better served elsewhere.
Relief flooded over Ivy and she gushed.
Thank you, Miss Carmelo. I knew there was a mistake and I was in the wrong place.
Miss Carmelo nodded.
How would you like to go down to the third grade class and help with the younger children each afternoon?
Miss Alapisco is in desperate need of a translator.
Ivy frowned.
A translator? I thought you were sending me to Lincoln, Maine.
Oh, heavens no, dear. That's just not possible. You would help teach the little ones English. You'd be a teacher's assistant. Would you like that? It seems redundant for you here. You could start tomorrow after lunch.
Feeling her face redden, Ivy nodded and went back to her seat.
She felt the tremble of angry tears trying to rise and push them down. She stared out the windows again, wondering about all the things she might be doing in the afternoons if she went to Lincoln, Maine. All that she was missing. She didn't know what those things were, but she was sure they were far more interesting than helping in the third grade class. After school, as Ivy walked from the building, someone handed her a Join the Orchestra flyer with information about the orientation meeting on Thursday. She stuffed it into her pocket. In line for the bus, she watched a young man ride by on a bicycle, pedaling fast. His white shirt sleeves were rolled up, and his blue pants were tied at the ankles with string so as not to get caught in the spokes. He wore a blue cap with some sort of emblem, and a leather pouch was slung across his chest. If only she had a bicycle she could ride to and from school, so she wouldn't have to suffer the humiliation of the bus and hear the taunts of the Lincoln, Maine students. When she boarded, a small girl, maybe a kindergartner, sat next to her. Ivy didn't even try to save the spot for Susan. At Lincoln, Maine, the students filed on, holding the same flyers. Ivy caught Susan's worried eyes searching for her, but she just nodded to her seatmate and shrugged. The entire way home, Ivy stared out the window. Why hadn't someone, Susan, Mrs. Ward, Bertina, Guillermo, told Ivy or Mama or Baba about the two schools? Didn't they know things were different in other parts of California? Didn't they know this was humiliating? Again, she fought back tears. When Ivy walked down the aisle to get off the bus, Susan said, "Bye, Ivy. See you tomorrow." "Bye," she said without meeting her eyes, too embarrassed to see Susan feeling sorry for her. She climbed down the steps to the road. She'd never been more grateful for a door closing behind her, or the sound of the bus pulling away. The moment she saw Mama standing halfway down the drive, smiling with her arms open to welcome her home, all of Ivy's pent-up emotions brimmed, and she burst. Chapter 10. That evening at dinner, as Ivy listened to Papa's ranting, she felt as if she'd been fed through the ringers on the washing machine.
"My family has lived here for over 100 years. My great-grandfather worked on a rancho when this very land belonged to Mexico and was not yet California. You, Ivy, are already an American, just as Mama and I are, and our parents before us, and their parents before them, may they all rest in peace. Luz, they said nothing about two schools when you registered her?"
"Nothing," said Mama. "They took the papers, they told me thank you, they said she could start today and the bus would pick her up. Bertina did not mention it in her letter. Mrs. Ward said nothing when I asked her about the bus. Everyone here behaves as if this is the accepted way."
"And your friend said nothing?"
said Papa, looking at Ivy. Ivy shook her head. All through dinner, Papa would be silent for a few minutes, then erupt again.
"Why are things different here? In Fresno, many children went to school together. Japanese, Filipino, Mexican, Anglo. Are we not in the same state of California?"
He served himself spoonfuls of Mama's albondiga soup and continued talking, a meatball balanced on his spoon.
"So it is fine if we join them for music and sports, but only after school? It is fine if we join them in a war. My own son is fighting for our country. What nonsense is this?" Papa slurped and chewed. "I will talk to the principals of both schools and have you transferred."
Ivy stared into her bowl, pushing the meatballs around. Something told her that Papa was not going to let this go. She was grateful for his defense, but at the same time, she worried. Would he make a scene with the principals? What if Papa was successful and she was transferred? Would the teachers treat her the same as the other students? Would the parents from Lincoln Annex complain and cause problems? And what if Papa wasn't successful? Would she be teased even more by the boys who sang Old MacDonald? Would the students at Lincoln Annex say Ivy held her nose in the air, thinking herself too good for them? Her head spun.
"I will call in the morning to make the appointments," said Papa. "Until then, you will stay home.
A little voice in her head whispered, "Orchestra." Ivy panicked.
"Papa, I don't want to miss the meeting about the orchestra on Thursday. Please?"
"Ivy, this is about your education, not about extra activities that serve no purpose."
She sat a little taller.
"But it serves a purpose for me. Music is important to me. And Fernando told me to keep playing. He said it brought joy to our family."
Mama must have seen the desperation on Ivy's face, because she told Papa,
"Victor, you will not make a problem for Ivy's sake." "I will not make a problem," said Papa. "I will make a solution."
When Papa came home Wednesday evening, he walked straight to the living room and sank into a chair. Ivy and Mama followed, sitting across from him on the sofa.
"What happened, Papa?"
asked Ivy. Papa just shook his head, looking defeated.
"Victor?"
Mama pressed. He cleared his throat.
"The principals both said the same thing, that this was district policy. They agreed it did not make sense, but their hands are tied."
He looked at Ivy.
"I am so sorry."
Ivy had never heard him sound so full of regret. She could tell he thought he had failed her.
"Papa, it's all right."
"No, it is not. If things stay the same, it will never be all right."
He looked at Mama, perplexed.
"He told me that the Mexican children are separated because of language and health issues."
"Health issues?" asked Mama.
"Like what, Papa? I'm not sick,"
said Ivy. Papa frowned.
"The principal at Lincoln, Maine looked me right in my eyes and said that many of the Mexican children are dirty and need baths, and that they have head lice and carry illnesses."
"Dirty? But that is not reasonable," said Mama.
"And all children have the same illnesses."
Now Papa's voice grew tight with frustration and anger.
"Luce, there was no reasoning with him. I told him that Ivy speaks perfect English and that she is ahead of her grade in all subjects, and he said that while it might be true, he could not admit her to the school because then it would not be fair to other Mexican children. He also told me that it is illegal for me to keep her home from school if she is not sick." "Illegal!"
"What about the principal at Lincoln Annex?"
asked Ivy. Papa sighed.
"He agrees that you should not be spending every afternoon helping the third grade teacher. They will test you for sixth grade after the vacation. He also told me that parents from all over Orange County are forming a group and they are inviting a lawyer to counsel them. There will be a meeting soon."
"Victor, maybe this is not the right place for us after all. Maybe we should go back to Fresno. Couldn't you get your job back?"
Stunned, Ivy looked at Mama. She was willing to give up all of this for her.
"Mama, the house in your garden and the washing machine."
"At what price, Ivy? You cannot even attend the regular public school. Papa is always saying education is everything." Papa rose from the chair and paced the room.
"That is a possibility. I am sure I could get my job back."
He looked out the front window into the grove. But he wasn't nodding in agreement. He was shaking his head, as if to say he didn't want to leave all this. If they left, he would never get to fulfill this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. As much as she missed Araceli and Miss Delgado, Ivy knew in her heart that if they returned to Fresno, it would be a step backward. It was just as Araceli's father had said. "Everyone moves from La Colonia sooner or later, if they want to get ahead in this world." Ivy didn't want to risk all the things they had always wanted. Besides, Fernando was counting on her. Before Papa could decide, Ivy blurted,
"I think we should stay. I can make the best of Lincoln Annex. My teacher is kind and I can ask for permission to work ahead, or go into sixth grade like you said. Besides, I already wrote Fernando all about our new house and how much he will love it here.
I can live in two worlds. I will go to Lincoln Annex during the day and Lincoln Maine after school."
Papa looked at Ivy as if he had never seen her before. Finally, he gave her a little smile and nodded.
"I agree, Ivy.
It is wiser to stay where there are more opportunities for all of us, and to fight for what is right. I promise I will do that. I am going to that meeting to see what can be done about this situation.